There's a bit of a baby boom going on in Ireland at the moment, and thousands upon thousands of parents out there are experiencing the joys of new parenthood. But along with the happiness that a new baby brings, there are also the additional hours of housework, cleaning up after your little bundle of joy. But what if you could turn your baby into a cleaning machine? Imagine that. A tiny pre-toddler crawling around the floor and cleaning as they go. An itsy-bitsy human mop. Sounds far-fetched?
Housework moves down a few notches on the important things to do list for new parents. BetterThanPants.com is offering mommies and daddies a break with a new baby mop suit. Essentially a onesie, equipped with thick mop-like strings, a crawling baby can polish the floor while on the move. Retailing for $40, the baby mops are made from 100% cotton and they are designed to clean and shine floor surfaces. The soft garment is constructed of ultra-absorbent material and it comes in four different sizes up to 12 months of age. The seller claims that the onesie will teach babies a strong work ethic and help parents to save on cleaning costs. The one-piece cleaning suit is generating quite a buzz. One woman posted, "Do you do them in adult sizes for when my hubby calls back from the pub?"
What you've heard there is absolutely no joke. In fact, some people might regard it as a complete stroke of genius. An enterprising designer over in the USA has designed a baby grow that actually doubles as a floor mop, allowing you to turn your rug mats into floor fresheners. Mooney's Eye on the east coast of the United States, Lenore Skenazy, is on the phone now with this and other wonderful stories from across the big pond. Lenore, is this for real?
Oh, not only is it for real, I'm surprised that you're just hearing about it because I wrote about it a couple of years ago when I was doing a story about the laziest people in America who are actually some of the most creative because you think about it, a baby is crawling around on the ground anyway, right?
Mm-hmm.
So if you simply add mop thingies to his elbows and his knees, well, then he's cleaned your floor. I mean, you know, considering the kind of mess that babies make in your life, I think it's only fair that they do their part.
I love the tagline.
What is the tagline?
Get your baby to help with the housework.
Oh, yes, indeed. I can tell you actually some of the other things that this guy invented. He came up with a way of, you know, it's about to be Christmas, right? And people stand there with little pieces of tinsel draping the tree, you know, piece after piece after piece. And he thought, well, this takes a long time and it requires standing, two things he could, you know, just obviously couldn't tolerate. So he came up with a way of loading tinsel into a sort of air gun. And then you stand back a little bit from the tree, and then you pull the trigger, and pop, and the tinsel goes flying, and of course it drapes itself over the tree, and it's done in about a minute.
That certainly sounds good to me.
It's a great idea, right?
It's a great idea. Talk to me about the baby grow mop, because we've actually got photographs on our own website. But can you describe it to us? What is it made from?
Oh, let's see. Well, it's made from, you know what a onesie is? A onesie is like obviously a one-piece outfit that babies wear. But on the bottom of the sleeves, actually like what, sort of like, you know, when you see cowboys with fringe on their leather jackets, imagine the fringe is little floppy pieces of mop, you know, a soft mop. The one that I'm looking at now is a boy, I'm assuming, because he's wearing a blue onesie. And then there's this yellow fringe that sort of makes him look like a toy pony for some reason. But as he crawls along the ground, the yellow mop part will gather up, you know, dust and crumbs. And frankly, probably a lot of the stuff that he ended up spilling down there, like Cheerios. And then you throw it, not him, in the wash and repeat the next day. And, you know, so long as he is in the crawling stage, you've got exactly what you need. You've got a little slave. The official name for it is the mop romper.
On the opposite end of the scale, Lenore, there is a story about that is concerning a lot of parents of young children, the caring of young children across the United States, an alleged nanny murder.
Oh, my God. This was here in my city. It was here in New York City, which is just astounding and completely nauseating. It happened several weeks ago. A mom took one of her kids out for, I think, a swim lesson. When she came home, she found unimaginable horror. Her two children, I think they were ages like 2 and 6, had been stabbed by the nanny, or allegedly, and the nanny herself was close to death, having tried to commit suicide after what seems to be a double murder. And this was just so horrifying, obviously, that it was all we could think about. But the weird thing that happened here is that right after that, a few days after that, we had our gigantic Hurricane Sandy. And so what threatened to become almost a crippling obsession with, you know, fear of nannies sort of got swept aside by the fact that we all had to prepare for the worst hurricane this city has ever seen. So in a way, it didn't end up transforming the city quite as much as I think it would have if the tabloids had been dwelling upon it for the next 3 weeks. Instead, we've been dwelling on the hurricane.
This is an unimaginable crime, really. I mean,
obviously. And that's actually one of the points that I tried to make. And, you know, my blog is free-range kids, and my whole point is that children are not in constant danger. Obviously, those two children, were in incredible danger, but most children aren't, and that's what I try to remind parents, is that, you know, people wonder, like, well, what could the mother have done? How could she have checked to make sure that the nanny wasn't a psychopathic murderer? And my point is, it's sort of like, how can you be sure when you're sitting in your living room that a meteor isn't going to fall through the ceiling and hit you? Because once in a while, something like that happens. But it is so rare that you can't live your whole life thinking about it or worrying about it or trying for some way to plan for it. Because if you plan for it, you know, like if you never have a nanny so that your children aren't murdered by their nanny, your children are really no safer than all of us who do have nannies or had nannies.
What about the story, Lenore, concerning primary school children and liquid soap?
Oh, yeah. Speaking of trying to get some grip on our fears, we were really living in an age where I think fear is the virus of the day. It just floats around the world and gathers steam and then comes back in a more virulent form. And one of the things we're worried about is children, period. And so it's gotten to the point where we think that our children are in constant danger even from very safe things, like in this one case, this is in my state, New York State, daycare centers are no longer allowed to, a kid is allowed to go to the bathroom by him or herself, right? Age 4 or 5, they can go to the bathroom. But they are not allowed to have liquid soap in the bathroom. And so they have to come out of the bathroom, and an adult has to squirt the soap into their hands and observe them as they wash it, because why? Why, Marty?
Because they think that they actually might drink it?
They're worried that children might drink the soap. No, I don't know about you, but many people can look back on their childhoods and remember when soap was a threat, right? Parents threatened to wash your mouth out with soap because it didn't kill you, but it sure tasted bad. Now we're acting as if it's the opposite. It tastes so good, but it will kill you. That's an absolute lie, and it's sort of part and parcel of the times that we're living in, that we can hallucinate that children are in danger from something as safe as washing their hands and make it into something that has to be legislated. And if the inspectors came to your daycare center and found the liquid soap, God forbid, in the bathroom, you could be, you know, fined or ticketed or cited for unsafe daycare practice. When I say it's safe. That's my message. Have you noticed, Marty? My message is kids are pretty safe.
Yeah, and I mean, do they think kids are totally stupid? Because once you taste this liquid soap,
Yes. Nobody. It's not like it's not Kool-Aid, right? It's disgusting. That's why it's been used for generations as a swearing deterrent, right?
And Lenore,
because it doesn't taste good.
And what about the hoo-ha, Lenore, there's been over the mother who let her 10-year-old daughter ride the public bus to school alone? What happened?
Oh, it's a story I love because it's getting so much attention. It's ricocheted. It started on my blog. A mom wrote in and said that she started letting her fifth grader, a 10-year-old girl, ride the public bus to school because there's a bus stop near her house and it stopped right in front of the school. But then she was called in. She, the mom, was called in for a conference with the principal, you know, I guess you call them the head teacher or the headmaster, who said that several parents had come to the principal and said that there's a mom who is letting her daughter ride a bus, a public bus, to school, and maybe that's dangerous, and why should she let her, and isn't that a bad idea? And so the principal wanted to know why the mother had chosen not to drive her, as if driving is normal, and riding the bus is bad. And so the mom said, well, what's the matter with my kid riding the bus? And the principal said, well, what if she's kidnapped? Now, once again, I have to hearken back to the idea that we have a very inflated idea of bad things happening in the world today. And like I was talking about before, a kidnapping can go around the world. It's such a rare and horrific story. The chances of this child being kidnapped while she's on a public bus surrounded by other people in a nice, safe suburb in the morning, in daylight hours, is infinitesimal. And for the principal to suggest that the norm, that the good parent would drive a child, is really changing childhood completely. Because nowadays, I don't know what the statistics are by you, but 1 in 10 children, only 1 in every 10 kids, even walks to school on their own. Children are dropped off and picked up, even though they're safe and they're happy when they get to school of their own volition. The girl in question told her mom, one day her mom was saying, okay, I'll drive you. You know, the principal says, this is dangerous. Maybe I should drive you. You know, I don't want to be turned into the authorities. And the girl said, no, mom, I want to go with my what did she call them? Her bus friends. And her mom said, what do you mean your bus friends or your real world friends as opposed to her fellow students? And she said, oh, you know, there's the old Chinese lady, she's a grandma, and then there's the mom with her kid who always cries, but it's not because the baby's mad, it's just because babies cry, and then I really like the bus driver. And she had made an entire community in just a few weeks of riding the bus with her fellow, you know, suburbanites. And this is something that the principal found dangerous and dangerous for her child and maybe lazy on the part of the mom, that the mom found heartwarming, and so do I. And that's why I think the story went around the world, because the principal was threatening to turn the mom over to the authorities for negligence, for child endangerment, when actually I think she was making the child safer than ever, because the child was developing a network of people she could trust who were watching out for her. She was learning street smarts. She was becoming confident. She got the very real skill of figuring out a bus schedule and how to get herself places. These are things that used to be a normal part of childhood when we assumed that children were pretty smart and needed to be part of the world so that they could grow up and be independent and safe and self-reliant. And now we're telling children that they're in such danger all the time that the only place they're safe is next to their mom in the SUV being dropped off at school. It's turning reality on its head. It's being afraid of things, the wrong things, and not believing in our kids or our community.
So essentially, this school principal was about to report this woman to the police for sending her child on the school bus.
That's exactly right. Child Protective Services is what she was threatening to call. And Child Protective Services are, it's a branch of the government that can come and determine whether they think that your parenting is good or bad. And if they find it dangerous, sort of like the principal did, it's not, the mother wouldn't be able to say, but I think it's safe, if the government says, no, it's not. And this is one of the things that disturbs me very much. I don't want the government, which is not immune to the, you know, predator panic and kidnap fear and hysteria, determining for my child what I want to determine for my child. If I'm not beating them and if I'm feeding them, I think it's not up to the government to tell me how exactly to raise my child.
Now, Lenore, when we consider dangers, in inverted commas, that children might face at school, we might think chemistry class.
Now, you might.
With all of those potentially explosive mixes of chemicals, etc. Our classes...
I believe in goggles, right?
Absolutely. Our classes, you would think, would be perfectly safe. But not so, I believe, according to the health and safety people in Australia. Our classes.
Oh, yeah.
What's happening there?
Like I said, well, I remember I was talking that fear is just a virus that keeps spreading. And with, you know, fear is not rational. And once you start thinking of kids in danger, everything looks like something that could kill them, to the point where in Australia, the teachers are required, or perhaps it's the schools, I'm not sure if it's individual teachers, are required to, they've registered 134 different class time activities and rated them whether they are very dangerous, perhaps like chemistry class, somewhat dangerous or not dangerous. And while I would think that art class, you know, playing with clay or painting on an easel, you know, constitutes the lowest possible class of danger, as in no danger whatsoever, except if you have no talent and people laugh at you. But no, it's considered moderately dangerous. And teachers are required to do a write-up of, you know, what the planned activity is. And, yes, they will be using, you know, watercolors or clay or tempera paints, and here's how we will dispose of them and which chemicals are going to be used, like water or turpentine, to clean the, you know, the brushes or to clean the smocks. And I'm not saying that you want kids guzzling turpentine. I'd say you do a little lesson at the beginning and say, you know, most classes don't use turpentine. Most classes are using tempera paint. But, you know, explain this is what you do. You don't swallow it. You don't splash it in your eye. We do everything in the sink. But even that is making a big deal out of something that we all know is safe. Marty, is art class not safe?
Well, it was in my day. Safe
it
as could be.
It is. They haven't, you know, added deadly microbes to the tempera paint. You know, it's not like you're painting with Ebola or anything. It's you're painting with red, yellow, and blue.
So basically what you're saying, Lenore, is as an observer of human activity and human reactions,
yes.
is that you're suggesting that why we need to protect and mind our children, no matter where are in the world.
Mm-hmm.
That goes without saying.
I think it should.
That there needs to be a pragmatic view of what we allow them to do.
Right. I think what we need to regain is the perspective that our parents had. It's not that our parents thought that everything was perfect, that there were no criminals, that there were no bad chemicals, that there were no bad people in the world. But they taught us. They taught us don't go off with strangers. They taught us don't drink the soap. Don't eat something that isn't food. You know, don't poke yourself in the eye with that. But then they gradually let us go forth. When they saw that we could cross the street safely, which they taught us, that's part of their job, then they didn't think they had to be with us every time we crossed the street. They gave us skills. They tested us, and then they let us go. And this idea that children are completely incompetent, chemicals are everywhere, killers are lurking all the time, is a new one. It's a delusional way of looking at the world, thinking of it as ready to kill our children between today and tomorrow unless we are with them and unless we put the paints away and never hire a nanny and drive them to school and pick them up like a, you know, like a package. Instead of a person, I'm begging us to treat our children like people and like people who are going to grow into adults, and we want them to be happy and competent and confident and grow.
Lenore Eskenazi, interesting to say the least, and I'm sure we're going to get quite a reaction as well. Thank you very much for joining us all the way from New York.
Thank you so much, Marty. And I'd just love to tell people that if they want to read more about this or join me in the conversation, it's freerangekids.com.
Freerangekids.com, and you can converse with Lenore.
Yes. Why not?
Excellent.
Thanks, Marty.